The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond, and hello, and welcome to IGN's PlayStation Podcast. I'm Max Scoville, hosting for Jonathan Dornbush, who is on vacation at an expensive rat park or some sort of island getaway. Who knows? This is episode 755, if you're keeping track. I barely am. I'm joined today by Jada Griffin and Matt Kim. Thank you so much for hopping on and hopefully helping me fill some dead air when I forget what I'm going to say.
I got in touch with Jonathan while he's on vacation. He took his PlayStation with him to play Ninja Turtles specifically. And because, you know, like you said, Rat Park, he's only playing Splinter in the Rat Park.
Okay, you're messing really with me. I was like, that part isn't that. I wouldn't put it past him for that, but I feel like just lugging a PlayStation 5 around isn't really. That's not really a very travel, you know, travel centric thing.
Anything is travel centric if you work hard enough, Max.
Fair enough. Sure, why not? Somebody actually did figure out how to make a PlayStation 5 slim. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But first, we have some exciting news, sort of, maybe. Sucker Punch posted some job listings because they want to hire people to make video games, which is what they do at Sucker Punch. And these job listings have a little bit of information that could let us possibly glean what they might be working on next. This is one of those, like, stop the presses, everybody. This is huge news. They are looking for an encounter designer who will deliver interesting and varied encounters in an open world game with a particular focus on melee combat and stealth.
I mean, there's only one game Sucker Punch does that really... Well, not one game that focuses on stealth, but one big one that comes to mind stealth. And we all know that's Infamous, right?
One of the stealthiest 100%. Games I've ever played. But no, it's hilarious because, yeah, it's like this is a studio that is known for stealth and also open world games. So, sure, why not? They're also looking for a senior combat designer asking, do you delight in knowing the details of attack or parry timing and counting frames? Because if you do, you should apply for a job at this company. This sounds like Ghost of Tsushima too, right?
Yeah.
I think it sounds a little, maybe possibly like Sly Cooper, potentially.
With melee combat?
I mean, Sly has had melee combat. Very minimal. Mm. It could be a rebranding of Sly Cooper to kind of bring it into the new age.
I mean, okay. You're playing Raccoon's Advocate here, which I fully support. Yes. I'm always down for more Raccoon games.
Is Sly a raccoon? I thought he was a weasel.
He's a bandit.
Devious
raccoon.
Right. Yeah,
okay, that makes
sense. It's a game about like eating eggs out of nests, like maybe, but he steals things.
Devious raccoon.
That's a little unfair towards raccoons. They also do other things.
They do eat eggs too.
Yeah.
Matt, what do you think?
No, I think it's Ghost of Tsushima 2. Yeah. Ghost of Tsushima 1 did so well, and they're just going to keep making it again. But I'm excited because I like Ghost of Tsushima, and so I'm excited for Ghost of Tsushima 2.
That's one of those games where I kind of wonder, what do you do to make it better? Because that is such a rock-solid game. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it pretty much just nailed exactly what it set out to do. You know, it's a big, huge, gorgeous, sprawling open world. It had a bunch of, like, very, you know, nice kind of quality of life things. And it was, you know, the combat was fun. And I don't know, what would you tweak?
Okay, here's my thing. I think it's going to be very funny if it happens, but I think they're going to leave the island of Tsushima. Right, maybe go to a bigger, maybe just go to Japan, but still call it Ghost of Tsushima.
I was actually thinking about this. I think I made jokes in like a news video a million years ago where I actually went and looked up a bunch of other neighboring islands and like fired off like possible ghosts of those places. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think this could be like a Horizon Zero Dawn Forbidden West kind of thing where it's ghost of blank.
Right.
Ghost of the mainland.
There you go. That's the title right there.
That's kind of Ghost kind of vague. Mainland. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that could be cool. I obviously would love to see more of that. And I think, yeah, to your point, Ghost, the first one sold 8 million copies. So I feel like that's a pretty good indication that they might make another one of those games.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. It is most likely, as much as I want in my heart for it to be a new Sly Cooper, I'm pretty sure it's Ghost 2. I think improvement-wise, I think it's just a matter of kind of varying up some of the different encounters, kind of like what they started to do with the DLC, mm-hmm. with, I forget the name of the DLC island right now, off the top of my head. But
Monkey Island, I think?
Yes, Monkey Island. Secret of Ghost of Tsushima, yeah. Monkey Island. But yes, it was... But yeah, they varied up a lot of stuff. They added a lot of different things. Like, you started to be able to commune with, like, different animals and stuff on the island. There was cat sanctuaries. There were deer sanctuaries that you each had different type of things you could do. I think the second job listing you mentioned was talking about, like, counting frames and perfect parries. I think that makes it sound like we're going to get a lot more duels. Mm. And I think that's one area where it can really shine is by... Because the duels are... kind of like the highlight of Ghost of Tsushima, being able to relive those kind of like famous samurai duels in that game. I think that is an area where they can improve and mm-hmm. just make that a bigger and more important feature and just something that's more in your face and you get to do it more
totally.
Often.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's very solid. It did what it set out to do.
Yep.
So I think at this point it's not so much like I think trying to overextend itself if they try to do too many new mm-hmm. crazy things, but I could definitely see them maybe, you know, introducing more nuanced styles of melee combat. So, you know, again, it can't be like a FromSoft game where you're fighting all these different monsters that have different abilities and stuff, but they could be like, okay, here's different types of fighters. Like here's different yeah. fighting styles. Like, I don't know, here's a ninja who goes in the trees. Got to throw rocks at him, get him down or
no,
something.
No, for sure. I think enemy variety is definitely something. Like, mm-hmm. that's a good point. Like, I think after a while, you really were just fighting, like, fast, agile guy, big, tough guy, sword, shield guy. And it just sort of, yep. like, repeated.
And they're like, great news, everybody. The sword, shield guy is now gold, and he's harder than ever.
imagine if the job listings were, like, looking for confectionery chef. Over at Sucker Punch, right?
Looking for adding a cooking mini game to there. Just you know,
we're branching out. We're going into sweets. We're going to make suckers and punch. It's going to be sweet.
But it was Iki Island was the name of the expansion. It just came to mind. Yes. But no. Yeah. And they added an enemy variety in that, which was great. I think we're going to get a lot more of the multiplayer stuff, the legends, which did really well. I think we're going to see more of that stuff kind of expand on. But yeah, no, I agree. On all those points.
The multiplayer was like. Co-op, right? That was
a yes. Okay. Yeah, there was a co-op's like campaign to a degree. It was like just like missions strung together, mm-hmm. Not like a open world where you could just go wherever you want. And then they also had like a survival where you had to defend a bunch of points.
You know what'd be good? Invasions. Mm. I feel like that would be a very good like kind of the Dark Souls approach. Like the new Sniper Elite did that, where like just a random like Nazi will show up from the internet and try to kill you. And, like,
what?
I mean, not like a
no. I know.
You know, then again, jury's out. You never know. I love that mechanic. Like the idea. It's also like completely nerve wracking when it's just like somebody broke into your game and they're trying to kill you because it's like I want to play in this world. I didn't want to do multiplayer, but that could be. Fascinating if some dude just like saunters out of the bushes and he's like, you know, draws his sword. You're like, oh, it's Bong Lord. Okay, I guess we're dueling, dude. Let's do it.
Especially with like, you know, ninjas, right? Like in Dark Souls and Elden Ring, right? Like you're fighting typically like a magic knight or anything like that. And he's sort of just like, maybe if he's polite, he'll do a little gesture, right? But like,
never.
If you're out in the woods, right? And suddenly you hear rustling and then, oh, there it is, a ninja up in the trees. It's an enemy player. It's Bong Lord.
Bong yep. Lord. We got to get him down from there. We got to throw rocks. Anyway, sorry if I just sort of got shot out of a cannon there. I haven't done this in a very long time, so please, please be nice in the comments below. Moving on, let's talk about a game that will not be an open world game, which is Final Fantasy 16. IGN put up a great sort of handful of little write-ups talking to the producer, whose name I do not have written down in front of me.
Naoki Yoshida.
There we go. Thank you. Glad you're here. But yeah, basically got some clarification about what their approach is with this game. And I think a lot of us, you know, because there have been quite a few Final Fantasies leading up to this, we kind of think we know what we're in for. But at the same time, they obviously want to try some new things and they want to, you know, open this up to new players.
They said, we found in our extensive user research that many of the younger generation of gamers have never played a Final Fantasy or don't have any interest in the series. To create a game that might excite and resonate not only with our core fans, but also with that new generation, we played a lot of games ourselves. So yes, in FF16, you will find inspiration from recent AAA open world RPGs. However, to bring a story that feels like it spans an entire globe and beyond, we decided to avoid an open-world design that limits us to a single open-world space and instead focus on an independent area-based game design that can give players a better feel of a truly global scale. I'm super down for that. That sounds like a very... I really hate that we do have to make that sort of delineation of open-world or open-worlds, but like... You know, not every game can be a huge, massive, sprawling, cohesive ecosystem. Mm-hmm. In some cases, maybe you just have a few, like, large playgrounds where you turn people loose. I think Dragon Age Inquisition did this, and it was, like, a pretty good approach to, you know, it's not like a hallway that you walk down, but it's also not just, like, one giant, you know, sprawling map.
Yeah, because Inquisition was one of those first, I don't want to say first, but it was one of those early games where it had that really big sprawling tutorial area that hey, you can go in here and play around, and if you really want to get lost in this area, you can spend 20 hours in this open tutorial area if you want to. And a lot of games have been kind of picking up and doing that going forward, so I'm kind of interested to see how Final Fantasy handles it, if they're going to take that approach. I wonder if it's going to be kind of like, because it seems kind of like the kingdoms are very much in like war or strife and whatnot. And so like, I wonder if there's going to be a whole tactical portion where you're kind of like, okay, I'm going over here now because there's, you know, an outbreak of a summon that's happening over here. And I got to go fight and quell that resistance or lead the resistance to quell the, you know, whatever tyranny is going on over there. But yeah, I think I'm interested to see. There's so many games out, and RPGs already occupy so much time, so having a way to kind of, like, trim down the fat that we don't really need in the RPGs is a welcome surprise to me.
Well, this is also, I feel like, kind of an ass-covering choice to say, like, this is not open world by design. It might be a very open, wide, you know, wide linear game, but this is the same deal with, like Dragon Ball Z Kakarot was not an open world game, but it had multiple massive, huge open maps that you could explore freely.
Yeah.
And there were sort of, you know, you'd have like recess mode where you could go fly around and do whatever you wanted. And then occasionally it would sort of funnel you into like, okay, now we're going to Namek. It's story time over here. Like, you got to move on to the next chapter.
Yeah, a lot of people are rightly, you know, comparing it to Final Fantasy XIV, which, funny enough, Naoki Yoshida also directs. And most of the developers on 16 are like veterans of the MMO. And that one also does a similar, like, there's no contiguous open world, but they've got a bunch of different regions, right, set on different continents, and you can, like, fast travel to them. And, like, anyone who plays 14 will tell you that those open areas are massive, right, which is why people beg to, like, have fast travel and, like, mounts and things like that, right? That's how big they are. And so it's one of those things where, like, if you want an open, like, if you're a game designer and you want an open world and you want, like, an Elden Ring, right, and you build a smart open world with, like, all sorts of, like, shortcuts and things like that, like, you do you. But, like, if you're trying to do, like, a specific design, which is show, like, a global scale conflict, have different, like, major cities, different, like, continents and stuff like that, then, like, you're totally welcome to just make massive disconnected worlds that you can travel to. And it will just be equally compelling.
No, on your note about talking about FF14 in relation to 16, it obviously is like a lot of the same people working on that. You should have talked a little bit about, let's see, FF16 will be its own entity separate from Final Fantasy 14 and the other games in the series, so you won't find as many tributes as you will in FF14. That doesn't mean that there won't be some Easter eggs, though. That said, FF16's main focus will be on maintaining that series-wide feel of playing a movie rather than drawing from past titles, which is good. I mean, we've talked about this on kind of previous episodes that I've been on, but it's, you know, Final Fantasy's like kind of, this is the first one that feels like really new in a while, you know, because 14 was getting multiple expansions and we're getting a three-part remake of 7, and then prior to that there were the three chapters of, you know, 13 and obviously 15, which got announced in like 2007 or something. So it's like been a hot minute since they were like, hey, here's the new Final Fantasy up here. So, you know, obviously, like, there's going to be people looking for something familiar, but they want to try to do some new things. You talked a little bit about sort of summons and combat, saying translating traditional summon abilities into player actions and allowing for real-time swapping and chaining of these abilities in battle has allowed us to create a system that not only looks great, but also feels really good to play. And obviously there is that kind of, there is that challenge of, this is a series that historically has been you know, turn-based. And more recently, it's gone into real-time combat. And there are sort of legacy mechanics or legacy concepts that you really... How do you bring, like, a summoning a giant deity into real-time combat without it feeling totally out of place? So, I don't know.
I mean, to be fair, even in the turn-based, like, summons have always been kind of the OP go-to strategy. I think 10 was probably the one that kind of balanced the summons the best, I would say. But, I mean, if you go back to, like, 7, like, being able to summon Knights of the Round towards the end game and mime it, and it just with the mime materia, and just like, okay, we're just gonna keep just copycat casting this spell and just wreck every enemy. I mean, it took 20 minutes for every fight, yeah. But you know,
I mean, someone's worked in like the 16-bit era because you just have like a cool JPEG show up, yeah. I guess it's probably like a bitmap or whatever, but it would just roll in and you know, the screen would flash a bunch, and then there'd be very high numbers flying off. You're like, hell yeah, look at those numbers
800
creeping in there.
800. I think like that's like this is speculation on my part, right? But I don't know if y'all saw the most recent trailer, the one from this month, but when there were like those like scenes of like the icons fighting, and you could see like a combat bar up on the top, right? And people are speculating that there might be like big giant boss battles where you can like turn into a monster and like punch another monster, right? And it's one of those things where I feel like my like completely breaking from tradition, but I kind of just want Final Fantasy to do an Ashura's Wrath, you know?
Yeah,
just
oh man, yeah,
big crazy fights with, you know what, throwing few QTEs for nostalgia.
I think that's kind of fair game, because I mean the idea of that is more gamified. Like obviously we look at QTEs as being sort of like, okay, you're stopping down my actual agency and having me mash buttons, but compared to a summon where you push the button and then the thing happens in front of you,
yeah,
there's a little more gaminess there, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it'd be kind of weird if it just turned into like a giant, you know, god sized Rock'em Sock'em Robots match, and you just you know, in the middle of another existing match. But yeah, we also got a little bit of info about the party system, saying that Clive, that's your new guy, Clive, by the way, if you haven't been keeping track. Gotta love Clive. Everyone, buckle up. It's time for Clive. Sorry. I'm going to have like the Clive stands coming after me now.
They're already filling your inbox.
Clive stands sounds like somebody else entirely. Anyway, Clive will be accompanied by one or more companions. These companions will participate in battle as well as trade banter with Clive. That said, the party's members will be AI-driven, so as allowed to players to focus solely on controlling Clive, much like we did with Noctis. And, yeah, you know, that's fine, you know?
I mean, if we get some great NPCs like we did with, you know, Gladius and Prompto. I mean, let's be real. Gladius was hot. I loved Gladius. Gladiolus? Gladius?
Gladius. Gladiolus.
Gladiolus.
Gladiolus?
I think it's Gladiolus. As I always called him, I just switched it to Daddyolus or Daddyus.
That's,
so,
that's
like,
acceptable.
You know, that's, yeah, that was just what it was.
I'm totally...
Ignis and Prompto were great as well. And so, like, I'm totally happy if we get, like, just real character development between them. Because I feel like older Final Fantasies, like, they've always have great party members. But sometimes you just don't get to dive in as deep to certain ones as you want. And 15 really nailed that.
Well, that's
dynamic.
Something I really loved about 15 was that they all did have like distinct unique characteristics that made them feel less like classes and more like actual people, you know? And I mean, obviously like with a role-playing game, you want to play certain roles, but at the same time having some established ones sort of help, and not just having these sort of, you know, boilerplate, like, here's the guy who heals, here's the guy who does the fireballs or whatever. Instead of having the guy who's like, aha, I have a recipe idea, you're like, all right, you like to cook, that's cool, whatever. I don't know, I would love to see more stuff like that. And you know, obviously it'll be interesting to see, I guess, you know, how they'll approach the party system and who those characters will be swapping in and out, because I don't know, like, we again with FF7 we kind of, you know, we're like, all right, you know, when's Yuffie gonna show up, like, you know, we know who these people are in advance, you know, and then with 15 it was like you kind of had a pretty set roster for most of the time, so it'd be kind of cool if you can, you know, sort of pick your favorites and have your squad.
I like how, like, it does feel like 16 does feel like a sort of like, okay, we did 15, you know, modern setting, you know, with the cars and everything like that, and road trip format. We're kind of backing away from that, going a little more traditional, classic, sort of like knights and sorcery kind of thing. But I'm glad that they, like, identified that AI party system with, like, people that you actually liked hanging out with as, like a benefit. And I'm hoping that they bring that back for 16 too.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to this. Again, it feels like such an unknown quantity, but I know... You're an FF14 guy, right?
We both are.
Yep. Okay. Well, I never got into it. I feel like the, you know, FF14 people are, they're always going to tell you if they're into it. It's just, Jada, you're excluded because you play every game. You play everything.
I do play everything. Yes.
It's like not fair. It doesn't count.
But, I just assume anytime anybody's saying like, "Yo, you played this?" I'm like, "Yes, I do." Even if I haven't played it, yes, I probably have played it. And I just don't remember.
But yeah, I mean, 14. It's I'm happy. It makes so many people happy, but I tried to get into it. And it just didn't click for me.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess it's sort of a relief that they're like, "Hey, this isn't just more of that. This is its own thing."
Yeah.
And my interest is piqued.
It's a 14's a big ask. You know, you really have to play like 60 hours in order for it to get quote unquote good, right? Like, because the first 100 or so hours is like really like just table setting for like the good stuff. But yeah, I'm really excited for 16. I'm really excited for people who have always been interested in 14, but the MMO stuff, you know, intimidates them, or the hours that you need to put in is intimidating. It's all
or
true.
Or just the subscription
or the subscription cost. It's all, these are all valid stuff. So, you know, I'm glad that this creative team that made a really good Final Fantasy game can make another Final Fantasy game that's more accessible for people.
Yeah. I mean, you know that there's stuff that they probably wanted to try in 14 that just is either too difficult to implement or just doesn't make sense in a multiplayer scenario. So
I feel like that's part of like the whole new what's the system called in 14 where you get like the NPC party members now?
Oh, the trust system.
The trust system, yeah. So I feel like that's kind of what they were alluding to when you're talking about with the party members that kind of swap in. Mm. Kind of sounds like it might be like a variation of the trust system.
I trust that one of them knows what we're having for supper. I hope it's delicious. We get to watch them cook it.
Yes. And it'll be very sweet and full of confectionaries.
Sounds good. Anyway, if you are sick of hearing us talk about Final Fantasy 16, I have great news because now it is time.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
To do a real pop shove it and kick flip into our next ollie of a story, which is that... Actually, it's kind of a sad one. Tony Hawk says that 3 and 4 Pro Skater remakes are not happening. This is totally like a weird, out-of-left-field piece of information, but Yeah, he was just on a Let's Play.
Twitch stream, yeah.
Yeah, he was on a Twitch stream.
It was amazing.
And just, yeah, you want to tell? Like, just...
Yeah, so like they were, is a streamer was just streaming and playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, 2, remake, whatever it's called. And he had Tony Hawk on. And at some point, he just sort of like, oh, you know, I really hope that they make 3 and 4 remastered. And Tony Hawk, who, you know, lends his name to the game, is actually pretty, like, in the development process, was just like... They tried, and then it got canceled. And then you just like explain the whole story, which is which connects back to an earlier story where there were reports either last year or year before that Vicarious Visions, the studio behind Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, 2 remake, got folded into Blizzard to help out on, I believe, Diablo 4. I believe Vicarious Visions is currently helping out Blizzard on Diablo. There were plans for them to handle 3 and 4 in a similar way. But once they got folded in, Activision needed a new studio to handle 3 and 4. And I guess, according to Tony Hawk himself, just on the stream, according to him, no other studio sort of could... They weren't happy with any studio to try 3 and 4. So they were like, well, I guess it's over.
So they just threw it in the recycle bin.
Yeah, pretty much.
Such a bummer. You better be able to grind rails in Diablo 4. I'm going to be very cross. That's such a bummer. And also, just I love when we get somebody who is outside of the gaming space to just come out and sort of... blurt things out, because this is like the kind of thing you get from like a movie director at a junket being like, oh yeah, sorry, you know, that movie isn't happening because blah blah blah. It's not, everything is so tightly under wraps, and I don't know, that sucks, you know, because obviously more different games are preferable to a bunch of studios working on one game that might not be for everybody. And I don't know, I hope that Tony Hawk gets to make more games, whatever that means. But he's, you know, he's a good guy anyway. Speaking of things that are not happening, here's another sort of downer piece of news. And I swear we have some good stuff after this. It'll be fun. But PlayStation is going to be skipping Gamescom 2022. That is, of course, the big video game convention thing that happens in Germany at the end of August, I guess.
Yeah, like third week.
I should know.
Week.
I think they're sending me. But apparently I don't know what I'm going to be doing there, because PlayStation's not going to be there. And they're not going to be a part of Keighley's opening night live show either, unless they're like really trying to, you know, pull back on expectations so they can go, ha, surprise, Death Stranding 2, which I don't know if they will. Nintendo is also not going, and neither is Take-Two. But the Embracer Group, which is, of course, the giant conglomerate of all sorts of studios and publishers and THQ Nordic and Saber and Coke Media and Coffee Stain, they're going to be there. And Bandai Namco is going to be there. And Microsoft has not said either way. But, it's kind of a weird slim lineup, and there are, you know, multiple factors at play here. There is the fact that there was a giant global plague, which was a problem. You know, maybe some people don't want to go to a giant convention center filled with 400,000 people walking around. And also, this fall seems kind of light. You know, there's not a ton of massive stuff coming out, so maybe it's just not really worth the trouble to get out there and set up a bunch of demo stations for games that may or may not be happening soon. But I don't know. What's your read on this, Jada?
Yeah, I mean, we always love to see as many people there at these conferences. You know, I've been doing the conference show lineup for 7-8 years now, and it's the big draw is always seeing like the big three there, and then also being able to fill in that time with all the indies and others, you know, other AAAs that are there. So it's definitely a big blow to the lineup when you don't have the heavy hitters that are going to be there. I think ever since the grand plague has hit the world, you know, developers have been, you know, changing up their strategy and like figuring out like, hey, why do I need to go to this conference and spend all this money, because conferences are expensive to get room on the show floor, and split my time and the attention of everybody there with 100 to 200 other games, when I can do a live stream and captivate 500,000-600,000, a million people, like, yeah, that are solely devoted to looking at my game for the next,
yeah, they're not gonna
48,
like,
72
wander
hours.
Wander off halfway through the demo and buy a pretzel. They're gonna be watching.
And
the
that happens.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting in line, you're watching somebody play, and they're like, they'll play for like literally, they'll wait in line for 20 minutes. They'll hop on, play for 2 minutes, and like, nah, this isn't for me. And then, yeah, and just walk off. I'm like, I waited 20 minutes. I'm putting in my 5 to 10 minutes on this demo.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is they also just added the you know, top tier of the new PlayStation Plus has demos, which,
yep,
if you can push out your demos globally to people who are paying money to play them, and you're not, you know, it's not the money going to the convention, like, I don't know, that seems like a pretty straightforward way to go about it. If you can control the messaging and have it on, you know, I mean, this is definitely a bummer, though, because, like, PlayStation has had some pretty massive, like, Gamescom presences. That was where PT got revealed and announced.
Yep.
Yeah, Matt, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I wonder... My thinking is, like, PlayStation has, you know, for the past couple of years, even before the pandemic, like, has been scaling back its presence at, like, E3 and things like that. So that's not hugely surprising. And another part of me wonders if, like, I think PlayStation's, like, big holiday early 2023 plans revolve around PSVR 2. Right? Like, I feel like that's something that they're ramping up heavily for that, like, time, which Gamescom would be perfect for. But I think, again, because of the pandemic, nobody wants to be sharing headsets at a demo kiosk. I didn't even like doing that before the pandemic. I definitely don't want to do it now, right?
Yeah.
No, that was an icky
It was
one.
Gross.
Yeah. I think I demoed maybe like two or three VR games like at conventions.
I think there was a story. I think people would try to figure out, can you get Pink Eye from sharing like demo headsets?
Yeah, I remember that that story
like that
going
was like
around.
A thing that people were like actively like interested in, because like that was one of those things where like when like Oculus and HTC were all showing off their new next gen headsets, I was like, I kind of won't put that on.
I was trying to get to the con. I was like, anytime I was like had a VR appointment, I was like, I'm putting this first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the first person in the convention center. I'm like, I'm there like 20-30 minutes before the doors open, because I just want to try the VR stuff, and everybody has to go after me. So
I think it was PAX Prime 2012. I was just like immediately the sickest on the first day. Like I was I was like the Typhoid Mary of that show. And that was also the year that I demoed the version, you know, 0.05 Oculus Rift. Like the very first model, literally made of gaffer tape and ski goggles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're in this like little tiny, you know, fenced off booth with Palmer Luckey, and I'm playing, you know, Doom 3 BFG edition. Like I'm looking through a screen door, and I'm just like, I definitely got people sick from doing that. Like that thing was not like, I mean, I feel like later versions, they're like, oh, it's you know, it's easy to wipe down. It's antimicrobial, you know, polyfoam or whatever. That one was like, nah, dude, that's foam rubber from a ski goggle. Like that is going to absorb things. Nasty. Yeah. So that's, I don't know. That's sort of a bummer. I hope that there's cool stuff at Gamescom. Yeah, I don't know. It again, like we sort of this fall is looking
real thin.
Looking real thin.
Real empty.
But there are some things looking even thinner, such as this totally bonkers PlayStation Slim that a YouTuber named DIY Perks put together, which is, this is one of those videos where I wanted to like just give up. Because it's so, like, the people are out there doing such incredible, utter witchcraft. But dude basically takes apart an entire PS5, which I wouldn't want to do in the first place, totally breaks it down, and then takes the guts of it and puts it into something that is, like, I think 2 centimeters thick, so, like, less than an inch thick.
Looks like an old-school DVD player, like, size.
Looks like a laser disc. It's gorgeous. It's, like, all made of, like, polished brass or copper, but Yeah. Did you watch the video?
I haven't watched the video yet. I saw the image of it, and I was like, that is enough for me to know, like,
okay,
this guy knows what he's doing.
So there's a catch, because the image of it is, like, it's really, really cool, and somebody's like, oh my god, that's amazing. Why doesn't Sony do that? And then, Matt, did you watch the video?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
What's the...
He had to move parts from outside of the unit.
Oh,
he had an
power brick.
Yeah, he could have been, like, external, like, processing unit for... That was more than just power, right? It was, like, graphics and stuff like that. Like, he had an external unit... In order to make it fit into that, like,
it
profile.
Was like a heat sink or power adapter.
Yeah.
He had this thing that looked like when like the teacher would, you know, pull down a big screen for a projector. It looked like the thing that the screen rolls up into, but it was like propped up on a pair of like flower pots. And then there's like cables running up to it that are like it's like water cooled. It's a really cool video. I highly recommend everyone go check it out. Obviously, incredible, brilliant work. But also, it's kind of hilarious to be like, we have put the PS5 in this thing, and there's like soda fountain cables running under the table, and there's this thing like the size of my sound bar back there. But I love that. I mean, I also we were alluding to this earlier, but good lord, the PS5 is a big thing.
Yeah,
I like my PS5. I like the style of it. The size doesn't bug me. It sits right on my entertainment stand, right next to my TV. Mm-hmm. So like I have just enough space to where it like perfectly sits there, and it looks really nice next to my TV, and it matches the color scheme and everything like that, which is also the one thing that bugs me about it matching my color scheme so much of my is that I don't want to buy the plates that are gorgeous. I really want to do the plates, but I'm like, none of the colors match my setup in my house right now, so I need more color schemes.
I painted mine yellow because I briefly made my PS5 look like a giant taco.
Okay, like I thought you were gonna go with like your for your love of cyberpunk.
No, that would have been cool. It definitely is. Now it's just sort of like a plain yellow and black, which is kind of cool. I might do like a Jurassic Park thing. I don't know, that's but cool. I had like vinyl strips across the middle of it that looked like lettuce and cheese and beef and stuff. It also looked like a third grader made it, but you know, it was funny for a second. But I've since like wall mounted my PS5, which is actually a very good solution, especially if you have a 1 year old running around trying to eat things that will electrocute her.
Ah.
I don't know. Matt, what do you think we're going to see of an actual slim PS5?
Probably in the next 2 years. I imagine, right? Like how PS5 came out, what, 2020?
It's coming up on 2 years, yeah.
On 2 years? Okay, so maybe in 2024, 2025, I would say. Yeah, but I'm with Jada. Like, I like mine. I like the big one, and I kind of knew, like, because there's always a PS4 Slim, there's a PS3 Slim, there's a PS2 Slim.
Every town is Elm Street, yeah.
There's always a Slim. I knew that there was definitely probably going to be a PS5 Slim at some point, but like you said, like I like that it's kind of ostentatious. I think Jim Ryan was the one who was like, we designed this purposefully so that it's like a conversation piece. It is a conversation piece, maybe not in like the most complimentary of ways, but like I'm glad that I have something that sometimes doesn't look like a game console, right? Sometimes looks like a about flower face.
I was driving by your house and I couldn't help but notice that you were a PlayStation fan.
Well, it's definitely, you know, conversation starter. If anytime you have people over, I don't have people over anymore because of the plague, but when I used to have people over, like, oh, do you have this? Do you have this? And, you know, these are people who don't know me very well. Yeah. First time meeting Jada because they're like, they're asking me, do you have stuff, Jada? But, you know, now I wouldn't have to worry about that because it just kind of stands out. So I'm like, oh, you have a PS5, let's play. You know, it's very easy to kind of to do that, and I imagine there are people who have that situation set up. So,
if you really want to make a conversation piece, you should disguise your PlayStation as a giant taco. Yeah. I highly recommend that. Good God. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, thinking about this, I think we're definitely going to get a Slim at some point. Yeah. But considering how weird this generational rollout has been, it would not surprise me if it's a little bit later than we might expect.
I think we're going to get it sooner. I think we're going to see it 2023, 24.
Really?
I think most Slims start unveiling around the 3 to 4 year mark. So I think they're going to follow suit with that. I think there's probably reasonings behind that when it comes to like just parts and stuff like that for them to go down to a Slim. I think we're going to see them try and make that adjustment with to help with the parts.
I mean, the big sort of X factor is like chip shortages and also just the fact that people have still been having a hard time getting their hands on an actual regular PS5. So who knows? I mean, maybe they'll find like a new chip that is better for putting in the Slim, and then they'll be like, good luck with those big old ones.
As they always do.
Yeah. Anyway, shifting gears here. This is actually a very cool new game that got announced like 90 minutes ago as of recording this. Hyenas is the name of the game. IGN had an exclusive trailer reveal. This is definitely one of those trailers where you watch it and you're like, what are they selling me? What is this product? And it is Creative Assembly, who you might know from Alien Isolation and Total War,
and almost all of them.
Yeah, yeah. Totally War, and then Alien Isolation. This is an original IP from them. I guess it's their first original IP, maybe, that isn't rooted in ancient history or
that isn't like. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess they don't own the IP that is ancient Rome, so that makes sense.
That's, I think the royalties on their became open source or whatever. But this is a PvEVP?
PvEPE.
PvE, physical education, guys.
PvEVPFPS. You got all that? I think that's fairly straightforward. But basically, it is 15 players per match, broken up into 5 teams of 3. That math checks out. And the goal, this actually sounds like really fun. The goal is to steal treasures, but I think they're pop culture artifacts, and you're stealing them from deep space freighter ships. And so that's why you're hyenas. You're like scavengers. You're getting on there. Looks super colorful. Looks kind of Saints Row-y, kind of, you know, kind of over the top. And because it's in deep space, they're going to be like sections that are in zero gravity, which I'm sure will completely come into play. Sort of weird. But I think you're going to be like stealing like Sonic the Hedgehog plushies and stuff, which sounds like kind of great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like Jada, you're super big on Apex, which I feel like has kind of a similar vibe. What's your read on this?
I really like the style that they're going for. I think kind of honing in on that core combat between like smaller groups, because, you know, Apex is either applauded for too many third parties where, you know, like, oh, cool, we just killed our third squad, and then 4 and 5 and 6 squads just show up and you're fighting, you know, 18 other people, and it's just, it's a nightmare, and you Sometimes you make it out of it. Most of the times you don't. But this one, it seems like it's going to be an interesting kind of like more focused on like, hey, win this combat or and you know, continue to do your objectives versus just straight, you know, kill everybody and be the last person standing. I'm excited for this. It looks pretty cool. I definitely want to see more.
Yeah.
Because we got a very small look at it today.
I mean, it's a trailer that doesn't show you anything resembling gameplay. It's one of those where you're like watching it like, is this isometric? Like, what is this going to be?
Yeah.
Stylish.
Matt, did you get a chance to check it out?
I saw a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know too much about the pop culture artifact things, but that'd be fun. Bart Simpson's memorabilia plates.
I don't know if Sega has the right to Bart Simpson's, but do like a crossover.
Total War Century.
It's total. You can steal Total War urns.
This is,
I don't know.
Sega publishing, right?
Yeah.
For this one. So, I mean, that's anything Sega or Atlas. So
yeah, no, there's a lot to pull from.
A lot of stuff to pull from.
I don't know. Maybe they can get Idris Elba to do a voice for Knuckles.
just a little recording.
Yeah. Why not? That movie was fun. I like that. I like that he ruined a wedding. Anyway, so I'm excited for this. I think it looks pretty cool. I used to be like a guy like, oh, I don't play multiplayer shooters, and now I guess I do, which is just kind of bizarre. I don't know. Tastes change. So that's...
It happens.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of nice to be like, ooh, I'll do this. But there's no release date yet. They have an alpha sign up on their website, so that's cool. I have no idea if we're like over time or on schedule or if we've been doing this for like 20 minutes. Does anyone know? When did we start? Do you know? I have no idea.
I don't even know what time it is.
It's 11:38 in the morning. THX 1138. So let's talk about what we've been experiencing pop culture wise. Jada, what have you been playing, reading, watching, listening to?
Oh my goodness, so much stuff. So I took a couple days off after post summer of gaming and everything like that. Playing a lot of Monster Hunter Rise, a lot of Apex Legends. Been playing some. I played TMNT Shredder's Revenge. Obviously, played through that like two or three times. I picked up Dragon's Crown. Like, there's so many games I can't even list them all. I will literally monopolize whatever.
I mean,
time does not exist.
We said, you play everything, but I appreciate that you don't just play everything new. You'll occasionally be like, Dragon's Crown. Why not? You
know, like, I want to go back and play this. But speaking of Apex Legends, Max, I remember last time we were on together, I told you about the control mode, which was like the 9v9 kind of infinite respawns. Mm-hmm. That's back right now, so Ooh. It's a good time for you to hop on and
all
check
right.
it out.
Suck it, Fortnite. All right, come check it out.
And I will. Send me a friend request or
carry my lifeless corpse.
And I will carry you, yes, and get you up to speed.
Now you have, it says here you're playing Ape Escape 1, is that correct?
Yes,
correct?
Yes, I'm also playing Ape Escape 1. Like, cause the
What fell on your head that compelled you to do that?
The new PS preview came out. I was like, and Ape Escape, so anytime I'm searching for anything, I always sort from A to Z when I'm searching in the store and stuff like that. Ape Escape is one of the very first things that pops up, and I was like, I'm going to replay the first Ape Escape. And it is way rougher than I remember. Just the very first stage, I played Ape Escape 2 like last year, and I remember the first stage, and it's like, it's not crazy big or anything like that, but it's got like a statue, it's got stuff all around. This one is literally like... It's not even a box. It's like a weird trapezoid type shape. And there's like five trees. There's like a gap like between like the mountains that are boxing you in. And it's just like leads into nothing. And it's just an invisible wall there.
Oh, man.
And it's just like, I was like, oh, man, this is...
That's, yeah.
This is where games used to be.
I think I did like a Let's Play of 2 when they did the remaster for PS4 or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, that's a fun game. But it definitely has like how something felt in your mind, you know, rose tinted goggles and all that. But was Ape Escape 1 the first DualShock game?
It was one of the early ones that required it. Yes,
right.
Yes, because you have to use the right analog stick. You flick it to swing your net for capturing the apes, or your sword for knocking them.
Spin it to use the kayak paddles to fly.
Yep.
because video games.
I remember that. So that one, I played Ape Escape when I was a child, much smaller hands. The early DualShocks, not the most ergonomic joysticks. I remember having to do that like rotational thing with the thumbstick in order to get the little
Sky Flyer or whatever.
I remember it hurting my thumb so bad after like playing it for like an hour. I remember my thumb just being like, I can't move this. Mm-hmm. Can't move this anymore.
Now, maybe I think that might be PlayStation's version of that Mario Party game that would make kids get like stigmata.
I feel like I ruined so many like N64 controllers playing Mario Party.
We don't need to talk about that game on this show. I don't want to talk about that game ever. I hate that game. I love Ape Escape as a concept.
Yeah.
This actually ties into, Matt, you're playing Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yes.
Do you know that there was like a crossover between those?
Yeah.
Which I always just wanted. I wanted like Metal Gear. I wanted Ape Escape remade in the Fox engine. Like, I wanted a super realistic animal control game about apes, but
with like horribly realistic monkeys that you gotta capture, you know.
Yeah.
That'd be terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of Metal Gear?
I'm playing it. It's nice. Yeah, it's good. Like, yeah. It. So good segue. I am finally fixing a big blind spot in my gaming library. So I beat Metal Gear Solid 1 for the first time last year. I also took a vacation after summer of gaming, and in that week I beat Metal Gear Solid 2, which A+. Really good game.
Good man.
Really awesome. And I'm starting Metal Gear Solid 3, and it's tougher than Metal Gear Solid 2, I think, because the open areas, I'm not as comfortable in them as like the tight corridors in Metal Gear Solid 2 and Metal Gear Solid 1. So I'm struggling a little bit, but like, I'm like, it's kind of crazy to me that they're both from the same generation. Like, it feels kind of wild that they're both on the PS2 era. But
no,
like,
that's like a GTA 3 San Andreas kind of thing. Yeah. Where you're like, what happened?
Yeah, like, it's nuts. It's nuts how much deeper Metal Gear Solid 3 is. But yeah, I'm early on. I just did the first part of the game where the credits, the intro credits ran for the first time in real, you know, for real. You don't have to do spoilers, right? The boss betrayed me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's like in the tutorial, basically.
Yeah. So I'm like an hour after that. So I'm still early on, but
I think 3 is like objectively the best one. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's I don't argue with people who are like that's their favorite, but like 2 has always been kind of near to my heart. Again, it is weird how like I guess 3 am I did 3 I did 3 through 3 and then 4 it was Peace Walker after 4, I think.
Peace Walker was after 3, I believe.
Before 4,
but
though?
Before 4. I think it was just like by a year or two.
Well, if
difference.
We're wrong, I'm sure we're going to hear about
it. Yes, definitely.
But it's definitely, to your point about like it going from corridors and like very tight, you know, ventilation shaft stuff into much bigger areas, that's like, it takes some adjustment.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. No, it's also sort of like, I feel like with corridors, there's a kind of, you know, it plays with the natural geometry of the level design. Like, it's kind of, it's easier to make, I don't know, like a cardboard box in a video game than it is to make like a beautiful tree. And it's like when you're playing, I mean, obviously the camo comes into play a lot, but there's sort of this thing where you're like, what constitutes cover?
You know,
like what's fair game here? Like how exactly how high is this log and what can they see over it? Like, I can see me in the grass. Can they, you know, it's kind of.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like, and like, you know, the enemy AI has always been kind of like, you can kind of mess around with it, right? Like, they see in a cone, and you can be, like, right next to them, but as long as you're not in that cone, they still won't see you, you know? Metal Gear Solid 3, I think, going at it now, playing in 2022, like, you definitely think the AI is smarter than it is, right? So you're, like, behind trees, and you're like, they can totally see me. I can see me. I'm barely even covered. I've got 30% camo, and I look like a man standing by a tree, but the enemy is just like, what's that?
Well, I mean, 2 things have happened. Like, when I first played those games, I was dumber, maybe. But, you know, AI was also, like, you know, we had lower higher expectations for it. It was kind of like, this is, you know, that was really cutting edge. Like, it was playing 2 when that came out. That was insane. That was, you know, amazing. And now it's like, all right, these guys are kind of stupid. You just distract them with a Sports Illustrated swimsuit special or whatever. So that's cool. What else are we going to talk about? I want to talk about Dragon's Dogma some more.
I watched the stream or whatnot, like, because it happened simultaneously as the Final Fantasy VII anniversary stream.
Yeah, good timing on that
one. Yeah, very great timing.
Have you played the original? You've played everything.
Dragon's Dogma, I have played, I think I have like 15, 20 hours on my Switch in it. I didn't finish it.
It's on Switch, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the Dark Arisen version.
Oh, yeah, I guess
whatever.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah. I like it. It's fine. It feels like one of those games where I really wanted it to be multiplayer, though, and that was really the big thing for me that really kind of turned me off from the series, is that it's a great game. It does what it does very well. But what I wanted out of the series, it didn't give me. So, like, it kind of diminished my enjoyment. It's as silly and selfish as that is. That's just kind of was my kind of take on
it. I remember that being, when I first played it, being kind of, like, quizzical of the pawn system. Because the whole thing, you know, the whole thing is you basically create
NPC pawn characters.
You make custom NPCs and then you share them online and people can like rent them out or whatever. But yeah, it feels kind of akin to sort of the FromSoft approach where it's, yeah, there's sort of a multiplayer component, but it's so obtuse that you don't really approach it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I jumped back into it recently and it's like, I highly recommend people go check that game out if they haven't.
It's really good.
It's currently, it has like the highest player count that it's had in like 6 years or something, yeah, because everyone's just like, oh, two? Oh, I remember that game. I want to jump back into it. That game is so goofy. It's so, you can get so silly yeah in that game. I love that you can pick up basically anything. And like, I forgot how like thorough that was. Like, mm-hmm, you could just pick up like garbage you find lying on the ground and just throw it at people. And like, man, I wish that was possible in like Bloodborne or something. If you could just like pick up a chandelier and throw it at somebody.
Say in real life, I'm like, you can throw garbage at people now. It's just not polite.
Yeah, that's true.
That system is. It reminds me of a system from the PS2 game Radiata Stories. And it was this like old this RPG on the PS2, but you could go around on the street and just like kick somebody in the shins, and it would start a fight with this random like person in town. Like, oh, this, man.
So that Dragon's Dogma does not have that. Yeah. I don't think the NPCs, aside from the ones who are like actual enemies, I don't think they'd care at all. You can just go up and throw like a crate in a dude's face, and he's like, "Arisen," whatever. You're like, "All right, dude. And, okay, fair enough." Yeah, I've been messing around with that. I also, I actually did play a bunch more Elden Ring, but I started reading Berserk. Have you guys read Berserk?
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, no, it's been one of my kind of like blind spots, but that is a very, very cool manga that also very, like FromSoft very clearly borrowed some very obvious stuff from that. So it's nice to finally delve into that and mess around. Yeah, I don't know. And obviously like Fortnite, stuff like that. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? I don't know. I'm just kind of ran out of things to talk about.
It's been a busy couple of weeks for news. So like, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a slower week to kind of get back and take some time and play some games and actually enjoy the stuff that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited that we're, you know, kind of getting this slight lull, but I'm definitely ready for some more news.
It's good. I'd like some news. I'd like to find out what exactly we're playing this fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that would be kind of nice to find out about, but I don't know. It feels like an odd kind of blind spot, you know, like normally going into the fall, like we have like, oh, I can't wait to play this. And like, I'm excited to play Saints Row, but beyond that, I'm like, well, I don't.
I think my big one is now is Marvel as Midnight Suns. I think it's my big one for like what, September, I think, or October.
Yeah, it's really weird that there are two superhero games coming out that feel like they're almost counterintuitive to what I want from like it. One is like a weird occult card game.
Yeah, card and game I'm like, strategy.
This is a pretty far cry from what I'm used to with Marvel stuff, and I'm willing to give it a shot because it's a studio I like. And then of course there's Gotham Knights, which is, for all intents and purposes, a Ninja Turtles game because it's a Batman game without Batman with four other people doing martial arts in the streets. And it's like, okay, I mean, again, I'm willing to give that the benefit of the doubt and check it out, but it's just, it's kind of odd. It feels like make a regular Marvel game, make like a, just make a regular Batman game, do it the
Max,
simple,
you know,
way.
Marvel's Avengers is sitting there waiting for you. You can go play that anytime you want.
Oh yes, I could, I suppose. That's true. Well, anyway, on that note, let's disassemble this podcast real quick.
Nice.
Is there anything you two want to plug at all? Jada, anything you've been working on?
Nothing to plug right now. I've got some ideas in the old brain tube, but, you know, still, working on those.
Cool. Matt, nothing?
No, yeah, it's we just finished Summer of Gaming, so it's kind of, we're in that little lull, but
slow news week,
slow news week. Well, yeah. But
just go find your favorite old news story and leave a nice comment on it.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I'd read them.
I just finished a video that I want to shout out. Me. It's all about me. No, I did another episode of Kitbash Creatures, my show where I build cool stuff. And this week I decided to do a mashup of Top Gun Maverick with the F-14. And I took a model kit and I turned it into Buzz Lightyear's spaceship. And we're like, this is going to be a huge hit. This is going to be the best video because everyone's going to go see Lightyear. People didn't go see Lightyear. That movie flopped and so did my video. So please go watch and give it a like. Whatever. That's up on the main IGN channel.
It did look pretty cool from what I saw. Like, it looked really cool.
It was fun. So. I got to build a little spaceship. It was a good time. But yeah, thank you both for joining me and for you know, shooting the
breeze?
Swear word. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Breeze. I don't know. I don't know how we go breeze to the other word that people say you shoot. Where can people find you?
Jada_Arena on Twitter and JadaArena on site.
Yeah. Matt Kim on the site, at LawOfTD on Twitter. I got to change my username. I got to do it. Matt Kim Writer. I don't know.
There we go.
Yeah. But that's not my username. My username is
Matt Kim, not the band.
Not the band.
There we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm Max Scoville. Thank you all for watching. As always, Beyond, and I'll be doing this again next week. If you have suggestions for what we can do differently, please word them nicely in the comments, and I'll check it out if you have topic suggestions, that too. Let's just expect it might be kind of a quiet news week. It's that summertime lull. And on that note, Beyond.
Beyond.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.